This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Welcome to Unapologetically Bold, I'm Not Sorry For. If you are a person that is tired of apologizing for being you, you know, the human part of you that sometimes feels like it has to be different at home versus work versus play, the human side that just wants to be hot, humble, open, and transparent about your wants, desires, and uniqueness. If you answered yes, this is for you. Join me, Emily Elrod, as I dive into conversations with amazing guests about what they are not sorry for in creative and loving ways. Let's get started. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Unapologetically Bold, I'm Not Sorry For. And I am beyond blessed today to have my new friend with me, John. Welcome.
Hey, Emily. Thanks so much for having me. I really like that intro setup. I'm going to have to copy that down the road. But super happy to be here and excited for the conversation. I'm excited to see where this road goes.
I love it. And you're such an amazing and dynamic person. So I'm so excited for the audience to get to hear you and get to learn from you, because you, in a good sense, you are different. And that's what I love about you. And your difference is that you are unapologetically bold about who you are. So people that don't know who you are, can you just give them a little background about who John is?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So actually just retired from the Navy. Let's see, where are we at? The end of October now. So I just retired at the beginning of August. So at some point I'm going to have to start saying I retired and not just retired, but I retired at the beginning of August after 24 years, most of which was spent in the Navy SEAL teams. Graduated from the Naval Academy with a degree in mathematics, went out to SEAL training, did my time in the SEAL teams, and then in the last 3 or 4 years of my Navy career, I started getting very passionate about mindfulness and meditation, and that's what I'm doing now. I'm the Deputy Executive Director for the nonprofit called Veterans Path, where we teach mindfulness and meditation to veterans and transitioning service members.
I love it. And I think that really actually flows into what you're not sorry for. So I just love to go ahead and hop on into that. So, John, can you tell the world what you are no longer apologizing for?
Yeah, I am not sorry for being a mindful man. And I'm sure we're going to get into what that means, but I am not sorry for that for sure.
And go ahead. Let's hop on into that. One, where did that first come from? When was your first memory that you're like, mindfulness? What is this and why should I even deal with it?
For sure. So in the SEAL teams, I had some ups and downs and I was having some mental health challenges, if you will. And I was being medicated by the Navy. The Navy had me on various forms of anti-anxiety and antidepressant medications. And I think they helped with the anxiety, they helped with the depression, but those pills also took the life out of me. They took the ups out of life. So I was just kind of this numb shell of who I had been in the past. And at the same time, I was seeing some counselors to address the, for lack of a better term right now, the demons that were that I was facing in my life. And one of the counselors recommended mindfulness and meditation to me. And to be completely honest, I kind of laughed at him, kind of blew it off, because in my mind, this preconceived notion that I had of mindfulness and meditation, that it is one, that it was kind of a snake oil, that it didn't really work. And then the second piece was that it wasn't done by people like myself. It was for hippies and monks. And not that I have anything against them, but I was a 6'2", 215-pound Navy SEAL who I'll be completely honest, I kind of thought that I was too tough for that kind of stuff. But then he convinced me that there were some benefits to it by showing me the science, the physiology behind it, much of which we've discussed in the past, and then showed me some very high-performing individuals that practice it. And I was like, well, if they're practicing it, maybe I should give it a try. And so in all honesty, my initial memory of mindfulness was one of, that's for the loonies. And then the other side of things was I initially got into it for performance enhancement. When he told initially, he told me initially that it was for addressing depression and stress, but that's when I kind of blew him off. But then when he said, you know what, this is going to make you a better leader, it's going to make you more focused at work, then I was like, okay, well, now I'll listen. So the byproducts were, it helped me with my stress, anxiety, and depression. I came off all medication, and now I feel like meditation with a T, not medication with a C, has really changed my life and quite honestly saved my life.
I love that so much, because irony is, I don't even know if you know this, that my story is very similar in that aspect. Dealing with demons, they gave me medication. I hated how I felt. I was sick. Again, that numbness. And I'm like, okay. Mine was, how do I own myself? So this is not owning me, because I'm a control freak. Yeah. And so from that aspect, the first time that meditation came up, I'm like, oh, that's against my religion. You know, that was like, what's kind of like, I am a Southern Baptist and we don't touch that.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, once I actually looked into it, it's nothing like that. It really does not. And it's that hippies and monk culture that sometimes go with it. So, and the reason why I love that you do it even more is because you're a Navy SEAL. Whenever they walk in, like, you're the cool kid, like, you're the quarterback, you're the head cheerleader, like, that's what you are. And you're talking about things. And I know that a part of owning ourselves is we don't want people to do things based off of influence and or fear of influence or because it's the cool kid. But this one, I'm okay with, because it allows people to see that it is a game changer. And I do believe whenever you get into understanding how it works for you and how it can work for you in the way that you can do it,
right,
it is a game changer. So I think that's my next question for you. As you hear people talk about mindfulness, one, what is your definition of being a mindful man? I guess we might need to start there.
Sure. So my definition of being a mindful man, or just a mindful person, is just being in the present, you know, not worrying about the past or trying to change the future, but just being very aware of the present moment, both the emotional and the physical aspects of it, and then not judging that present moment. And then the mindful man piece to it, I do like to kind of point out that piece, because so many of the mindfulness and meditation teachers that I've met have been women, and in the male kind of culture, the toxic masculinity side of things, men have that same preconceived notion that I had before, is that it's for the soft, it's for the weak of heart, it's for the weak-minded, and it's actually completely opposite than that. It's for the strong. It's for those who are willing to confront and deal with some of those inner demons. Instead of just suppressing them and pushing them down in the basement, they actually confront and process them. And it takes a lot of courage to do that. So for the men who are watching and listening to your show, I highly encourage them to take a step toward mindfulness, even though it has that connotation that it may be for the weak and the soft.
Mm-hmm. And that's true. It's a misnomer. It is a stigma that comes with it, just like mental health. As well, I call it mental fitness, and it's like, oh, okay. I'm like, just like you work your physical body, you need to work this one upstairs, because guess what? That's where everything stems from. Your thoughts lead to your feelings, which lead to your actions, and over time, that becomes behavior. But I think that's the cool part about mindfulness, and what you are talking about is what my definition is. It's awareness with love, And for me, love is to be patient, kind, honest, understanding, not boasting of ill will. It's not to get angry with ourselves. It's to be, again, unapologetically bold about who we are and bring an awareness to it. Is this a valid point? Should I look at it? And so how has that helped for the people like, this is still voodoo, we don't need to touch it, from the performance side of it? Because it is a game changer in performance whenever you can bring awareness, especially with leadership. Talk about maybe a story that you have or an experience that you've had with the performance side of mindfulness and meditation.
So, I mean, the list is really endless, but I'll tell you, one is I would never go on a show like this because I would have anxiety about getting on a show, talking to somebody without having some type of script set aside that I could read or at least have to reference. That is one thing that I no longer feel any kind of need to do. I feel very comfortable in my skin. I feel very comfortable in talking about my experiences, my life, and sharing those life experiences with others. But really where I started to notice the biggest difference was about 2 months into regular meditation and practicing mindfulness. And I want to get into the differences and the overlap between those here shortly. But about 2 months into practicing, I started to feel the difference. But then somebody else came up to me and they're like, hey, what are you doing differently? Because it seems like you're more focused at work. It seems like you're more productive. It seems like you're able to get more done in less time. And that's when I was like, what am I doing different? Oh, light bulb, I'm practicing mindfulness and meditation. So I'm actually able to focus on my tasks. I don't sit down in front of my computer and get distracted by my email, my calendar. I go task by task instead of trying to multitask. What I found that trying to multitask is also a misnomer. It's not possible to do. Mm-hmm. Really what you're doing is breaking each task into little fragments and you're getting through each fragment. And at the end of the day, if you look at your task list, what have you actually got done? You're not getting that much done. Mm-hmm. And the time in between those kind of switching between tasks, that adds up and actually ends up taking more time from the day. So my performance improved in that I was more focused, more productive, but then I was also less stressed when somebody came to me with a task. In the past, how I perceived that task was a threat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how a lot of us perceive tasks. We assign it, work that comes with it and a deadline. And instantly our cortisol shoots up. Go into the red, and our amygdala, the fight or flight, and I know you have other terms for that, the fight or flight, and I think you had like four or five, the fight, flight, freeze, I forget what the other pieces are that you have to it, but bottom line, that part of our brain takes over, and we perceive that as a threat.
Oh, yeah.
We react instead of respond, but what I was doing, I was realizing that every time I had a task or a deadline, I was able to rationally think through that and process it and respond rather than react. So that's where my kind of performance improved. And then the byproducts were there as well. And again, coming back full circle to that stress and anxiety and depression, that went away. But the other piece was I was more involved in my life and my life was richer.
Yeah.
So I have two little kids. And at the time when I first started this, I had one. My daughter was 6 months old. And I was getting up in the middle of the night, when my wife wasn't, we were kind of switching duties. And I was feeding my daughter with this bottle. And as I was in the middle of the night feeding her with this bottle, I was like thinking about, okay, what's my to-do list tomorrow? What's my to-do list tomorrow? Or, what did I screw up yesterday? Whatever. And I was finding that I was not paying attention to this beautiful miracle that was right there in my hand. And then I would put her to bed and I would go lay down in bed. And now I've spun myself up and I would never get back to sleep. And after practicing regularly, what I noticed was when I was feeding my daughter in the middle of the night, I wasn't spinning myself up. I wasn't thinking about the past or the future, but rather paying attention to the little sounds that she was making when she was drinking this bottle. When she's reaching up and grabbing my hand, all these little things, I was like, wow, I've been missing this. Mm-hmm. I haven't I've been doing it, but I haven't even been paying attention. And then I would be able to go back to sleep after feeding her. And that's when that's maybe not a performance enhancement, but a life enhancement that I got from my practicing mindfulness and meditation, is that it made me enjoy the experiences of this thing called life so much more.
And I think the cool part of that, from the science behind of it, is when you're starting to cherish it. And in that moment of cherishing it, you get to feel that feeling of cherish instead of going to the ladder of missing.
Right.
And loss. And that's what I've found too many times. And actually, the funny thing is that me and my kids had this conversation the other day. And it stemmed from, which of course are 6 and 9, so I didn't talk about it, but it stemmed from somebody talking about suicide. Mm-hmm. And from the suicide, if somebody's talking about it, thinking about committing suicide or doing the act of suicide, that you tell them what you will miss from them. But I'm like, that's a reactive approach, in my opinion. Yes, it's once you're to that point, it still has valid. But for me, why don't we start saying what we cherish now as a preventative approach, to say, oh, I cherish this moment. I told my kids this morning, I cherish that we had this storm, that we have trees down everywhere. But the reason why I cherish it is because, and this is going to make me sound so redneck, my chicken outside was getting attacked by a hawk. And if I had not stayed here, my son had not convinced me to stay here last night, we would not have our baby chicks. Most of them would actually be dead. And I would have missed my chicks. You know, it's something so simple, but I told my kids, I was like, that is a moment. I'm going to note it. Right. I cherish that I weathered a storm that was crazy. I didn't want to deal with it. I heard the booms, the bangs, and everything. We had power out. Everything was going crazy. But I found a moment to cherish. And I think that's the important thing with mindfulness that is missed a lot of time whenever people think of it. And it may be a part of us that having people on like you speaking about the actual life effects of it that bring it to another level.
Yeah. But
I don't know who would not want to miss that moment of your kid, you know?
Right. And I mean, that's just an anecdotal example, right? I mean, that since then, now my daughter's almost 4. There's times when, you know, I'm out there playing with her, which if I hadn't found mindfulness and meditation, one, I may not even be here, completely honest. If I was here, but I hadn't found it, I may not be enjoying times at the playground with her, or I may, and now I have a son, and I may not be enjoying their interactions. I mean, when they play together and I just sit and watch and enjoy that. And then outside of the family, I mean, which is beautiful to me, but at work, I find that I'm happier at work than I was before. Like, I feel a sense of accomplishment, a sense of camaraderie that I had lost. And now I've got that back. And it's really that peace is present in all of my walks of life now. So I feel much, again, happier and healthier, and that I'm experiencing a richer life than I was before. But going back to your cherished piece, I don't know if you know Brian Maron and Greg Williams. They have a podcast called the Left of Greg podcast. And I was on, Brian's a former Marine, and he had lost a friend recently to suicide. And he had taken that as a message to him that he needed to call his friend more regularly. Mm-hmm. And what he started doing is, when they have birthdays, rather than sending them a text and saying, hey, happy birthday, or calling them and just saying the bland happy birthday, which is great, but now he calls them. And if he gets them, or he gets a voicemail, he leaves them a message and says, hey, this is what I love about you.
Ah, yes.
And I think that's huge. That's a game changer. If you're able to express to people what it is you cherish about them, that changes their brains physiologically. Mm-hmm. We talked about dopamine and oxytocin when we spoke a couple weeks ago, and how powerful those chemicals are, and how much there is a need for those. And those, you know, just simple cherished statements or phone calls like that, that can literally save lives.
Oh, and the importance of it even now more than ever, in my opinion, especially with COVID, especially with us going into the winter months, seasonal affective disorder. Like, there's so many things that are popping up that our environment's already going to fight against us. Right. Combine that with an election. There's going to be a lot that is coming at us, but we get to own ourselves instead of letting the world own us. And that's what I talked about, awareness with love. And I think that's where I want to transition into, what is mindfulness versus meditation versus, you hear gratitude, you hear, I talk about trigger recognition. All of these have different things that are a part of mindfulness, but I think it's good to bring them down for people that don't know what it is.
Yeah. Well, the way I picture it is a Venn diagram. And for those who don't remember what Venn diagrams are, it's basically the circles that have little overlapping pieces. I'm a math major, so I nerd out on Venn diagrams. But anyway, mindfulness, if you can picture one circle is mindfulness and the other circle is meditation, and then there's some overlap between the two. You can be mindful in having a conversation. Right now, Emily, I'm trying to be as mindful as I can in listening to what it is you're saying rather than trying to formulate a response right off the bat, which so many of us do in our lives, is we have a conversation and then afterwards you're like, well, what did the other person say? And I don't remember much because I was trying to formulate my response. You can eat mindfully, and that's a beautiful thing to do. I mean, if you sit down to a meal and you take your time, you smell the aromas of the food, you can see the textures, and actually once you put that food into your mouth, enjoy the taste, and you just take your time through a meal, that, coming back to living a richer life, that is going to make your life richer. One, because you're going to enjoy the meals, but two, taking that time to actually be mindful actually literally rewires your brain and can set you up for success throughout the rest of the day. But anyway, so you can do mindfulness without meditating, being mindful about your conversations, being mindful about your eating, being mindful about driving on the highway, and, you know, actually paying attention. That's what mindfulness is, paying attention, situational awareness to the here and now. Meditation is when you sit down, or not literally sit down, but you set aside some time and you're very intentional about taking that time to meditate, whether it's transcendental meditation, whether it's mindfulness meditation, whether it's yoga nidra, whether it's any type of meditation, there's lots of them. The overlap between the two is mindfulness meditation. That's where you sit down to meditate and you are mindful of your bodily experiences, of your emotional experiences. So one of the ones that I do quite often is just finding the anchor of my breath. That's something that you're always going to have with you as long as you're alive. And you can really focus on the physical sensations of breathing. Focus on the feeling of the air passing your nostrils as you breathe in. Focusing on the feeling of your lungs expanding in your belly and your chest. Focusing on the reverse as you breathe out. And you just do that two or three times. And that can really change how you are reacting, responding, by tapping into your parasympathetic nervous system rather than your sympathetic nervous system. It can bring down your respiratory rate, bring down your heart rate, bring down all your bodily reactions that are typical to stress. So one of the things that I do when I speak with somebody about mindfulness and meditation is I try to start by stressing them, which is kind of counterintuitive, but I ask them, hey, I want you to think about the stressors that you have going on in your life. And as you're doing that, notice the physical reactions that you're having. A lot of people say, well, I feel my hands are sweating. I feel my heart rate increasing. I feel my forehead starting to tighten up, or my jaw starting to tighten up. And I'm like, okay, that right there is being mindful. You're paying attention to what's happening with your body. And then I have them just take three nice controlled breath and pay attention to that breath, and then have them take another check on where they are. And it's dramatic. You can actually see somebody's forehead like getting less tense. You know, the jaw may not be touched. And it's pretty wild, just that three breaths. And you can do that anytime, anywhere. You can do it on the road. If you get you know, cut off by somebody, and you're like, your instant reaction is to call them some names and chase them down and have some mad road rage. But instead of doing that, take a couple of breaths and you can maybe express some compassion towards that person. Who knows why they may be acting erratically? Maybe they just had a very bad day. Maybe they're trying to get to a hospital because they're having a kid, you know, flipping them a finger. So yeah, it's pretty wild what you can invite into your life when you start bringing these practices into your life. Probably went on a tangent there, but hopefully I covered the difference.
No, you did. And what comes to mind for me is this is how I am in the South and how I got mindfulness. I do the wellness, you know this, and the viewers know this as well. So wellness, safety practices. But the first one, I'm like, you know, snipers use this, right? I'm like, right. Box breathing. And I actually help people with their hunting strategies and because how they get jittery, you know, and then we could throw that into sports and how speaking with people, what I joke with some of the baseball players is like at home plate, you want to have your home state, like homeostasis, like you want to be at your calm. And the principle again is you are owning yourself. And that's the difference that I see between mindfulness and meditation is meditation is almost what I call like wisdom. It's knowledge and action. You're putting an action towards it and you're feeling how it feels. And so for people that are thinking like, oh, this is weird still. And this may like breathing. I'll say for me, my meditation time is also my prayer time. And for myself, it is a way for me to calm myself and to control my thoughts and being mindful as well as meditating on a certain task at hand. Because what I found is a lot of time for me, I'm an overthinker. It shoots and it goes and it's like, come back, task at hand, I'm like task at hand. And feeling those feelings and feeling those emotions. And here's the cool thing too, is whenever you tap into what meditation can give you, you're practicing it. And so when that person that walks in the room that you can't handle, they owned you. They literally owned your physiology. They literally took you over and you didn't even know it, but now you do.
Yeah.
And now, you know, again, I talk about trigger recognitions. That's a big thing that I'm on what are these triggers? What are these things that you're being mindful of, but also putting the practice on to know what it feels like to even be at your home state. And so for you, I want you to talk about an experience whenever you have seen like this come together in a beautiful state. I know we talked about your daughter, but is there another time that you can think about that was like, oh, yes, I am a mindful man and I am glad, here is why.
Narrowing it down to one more experience. That I'm probably going to have a little bit of difficulty doing. I'll tell you, just to get radically personal here, but in just conversations with my wife, prior to learning the skills of practicing meditation and mindfulness, there were times when I would zone out. I am apologetic for that. I'm not apologetic about being a mindful man, but I am apologetic for being not mindful in the past. Mm-hmm. And in conversations with my wife or in conversations with some of my friends, I would not only work to formulate a response to what it was they were saying, but I would even go further in that I would completely tune out and think about things that were on my to-do list, think of things that were stressing me out. And now I pay a lot more attention to my beautiful bride. Mm-hmm. And I think that has changed our relationship. I know it has changed our relationship for the better. Mm-hmm. Tremendously for the better. And that trickles down through my life in that I feel better about my relationship at home. I feel better going into work. That carries forward in my attitude at work. I have better relationships at work. At the end of the day, I feel better about work. Mm-hmm. So now I can go home, and it's just this cycle. So I don't know if I can put a pin in one experience. I think it's just how it's changed my experience of life and how totally different. My perspective is totally different than it was 3-4 years ago.
And what I hear on that too is cherish. You even said that about your wife in one of our notes. Just, I know that you have love and gratitude, and she is your world.
She is.
And I love that. Like, that is so amazing to hear people speak so openly about how much they care, and they're, instead of being mindless about something, they're being mindful. And again, I think my thing that I keep coming to is that cherishing, that caring, and how it can get you to the next level. Because I joke with my husband, happy wife, happy life. But that's a saying. But the thing is a happy marriage or a happy relationship, especially the people that can own you and know how to twist the knife the easiest to say the things and elicit the responses. If you don't practice some of these things, it can really go south.
Quickly. Things turn toxic. And then, one relationship turns toxic, and that has profound effects. I mean, we talked about, before you hit record on this show, we talked about the connections and how those connections lead to other relationships with other people. Well, the inverse is true too. As soon as one relationship in that kind of chain turns toxic, that whole chain can fall apart. And I think the most important relationship that you can foster, at least here in this worldly side of things, not talking about our spiritual relationships, but our worldly relationships, is the relationship with your significant other. And if that starts to get toxic, the rest of your world becomes toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And you can protect against that. I mean, there's a whole litany of ways that you can protect against that, but one of the big pieces is by being present in the relationship. And that comes from being mindful.
Oh, yes. And I will tell you, on this journey, no matter if you're an entrepreneur, if you're a leader, if you have kids, no matter what it is, there you may get plans and you may get told things, but it never goes the way that it, even if you have a step-by-step instruction. So all that to say is what I learned in these past 2.5 years or almost 2 years of owning my business, and this is what I tell every entrepreneur now, make sure you're right at home. You got to be right at home, because if you want to lead others, you got to lead at the house first. And that's my opinion on it, because that's whenever me and my husband, I'm like, whoa, we're doing great work, but I got to be great with you. And if that's not happening, other things will not happen.
Yeah.
So I digress on that subject.
Well,
but
can I just jump in with one piece there is absolutely, you need to be right at home, right? But it's not just fostering that relationship with your significant other. I just said that was a big piece of it, but it's also taking care of yourself.
Mm.
And if you're not taking care of yourself mentally, physically, spiritually, all the different aspects that make you who you are, then you're not only doing yourself a disservice, but you're doing your family, your loved ones, your friends, your colleagues in this service, because you're not able to present the best you.
Mm.
It's much like, and I've used this in the past, but it's much like the analogy or the metaphor when you get onto a plane, they tell you, hey, if we have a loss of oxygen, the mask will drop down, put your mask on first, because if you pass out, you're not going to be able to take care of your kids, right?
Mm, yes. Well,
that's, if you're not taking care of yourself, you're not going to be able to take care of your relationships with your others, whether that's your significant other, whether it's your colleagues at work, whatever. You got to start by taking care of yourself, and that enables you to take care of the other relationships.
Yes. You can't love others if you don't love yourself first, and you can't lead others if you don't love yourself first.
Absolutely.
And I think that's very important. And also the science behind that, just to put a little note, that sleep, food, mood, and movement are all mutually reinforcing of one another. And so how these all impact our body and how we care for ourselves, how we love ourselves, how we feel rewarded, our stress levels all come together in addressing the mindfulness and even the meditation part of it. And I think this is a key thing that I do not want to leave this without saying too, and getting your input. You didn't get where you are in a day. So people starting mindfulness and meditation are like, this ain't working for me. Because it was not a quick fix. It did not cure the world in a day.
Yep.
Talk to those people for me for a second.
Yeah, I mean, I was one of those people, right? So it took me about 2 months, but about 2 weeks after I started, I went back to that counselor who recommended it to me. And I was like, Doc, this stuff is not working. And he talked to me on my level, the kind of dumb knuckle dragger level. And he's like, hey, have you ever gone into the gym, worked out for 2 weeks, and come out looking like Arnold Schwarzenegger? It's like, no, of course not. He's like, well, it's the same thing. You can't work out your brain, work out your mind for 2 weeks and expect it to change completely. It will change, but it's, you know, minuscule. But those minuscule changes add up to massive changes, much like going to the gym. It's not like you're going to look in the mirror after every workout and say, wow, look, I've changed dramatically. It's a minuscule change, but you do it for a couple of months, you're going to see those changes. It's all cumulative. And the same is in reverse. So you stop going to the gym. You're like, I didn't work out today. I don't look too bad. I didn't work out for a week. Not too bad. I don't work out for a couple of months. It starts to change. The same thing with mindfulness and meditation. If you practice it regularly and then you stop, all those gains that you've made, all that rewiring that you've made, that neuroplasticity that you've tapped into, all those new neural pathways that you've created, they atrophy and you go straight back to where you were over time.
Mm-hmm.
So two things. One, it takes work, but it's well worth it. Just like being healthy and being in shape is well worth it. Your brain being healthy and your brain being in shape, it's worth it. And then two, it's worth maintaining because it drops off pretty quick if you don't maintain it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And it's, for me, it's not about perfection. It's about progression.
Yes.
Stepping into it every day. And I love too that earlier in the show, you talked about at 2 months, you had somebody start noticing it for you. Irony, at 2 months is typically when people start noticing on your physical body.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And so that's very important to note, too, that you may see the changes or other people may not see the changes. And you know that you're doing all this work. And it's still, don't take validation from others. That is huge on to maintain that momentum, that cycle, to continue it on. So such an amazing conversation, John. So I have a two-part last question. First part is, people are apologizing for being a mindful man. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to show that they are doing soft things. What would you tell them?
Yeah, well, I will tell you that there are a lot more people doing this than you think are doing it. And it's becoming much more widely accepted in Western culture because in all honesty, it's an ancient practice that warriors used to practice. And somewhere along the line, it got changed into something that weak and soft people do. Once I started opening up about practicing, I had a ton of people come up and be like, oh yeah, I practiced too, but I didn't want to admit it. And I'm like, why not? Why would you not want to bring something this powerful to others and share that? And since then, a lot of those people have shared it. So one, realize that what you're doing is not something that you want to hide, something that has changed you for the better, and it's something that you want to share. And two, more people are doing it than you realize. Not that that's necessarily validation for doing something because a bunch of people are doing it, but it's just have faith that you're not alone in this. So I think that's what I would like to say to those who are meditating in private, practicing mindfulness in private.
I love it. And then the final question is, where can people find you? How can they get a hold of you if there's like, oh, you are my person. I need to like speak to this human. How can they find you?
Yeah, best way is on LinkedIn. I do have other social media, but I keep that somewhat private on Facebook and Instagram. But LinkedIn, John McCaskill, J-O-N. Last name is McCaskill, M-A-C-A-S-K-I-L-L. You can find me there. I believe I'm the only John McCaskill Navy SEAL commander practicing mindfulness now. So if you look for that, you'll find me.
I'm pretty sure you are too. I love it. And then for anybody, I cannot stop without talking about Veterans Path very quickly.
Oh yeah. Thank you.
Because I think it's a huge plug too for people that are listening to this, because you are a nonprofit. Am I correct?
That's correct. Yes.
And so how can they reach out, donate, help with any of these causes that you have?
So at Veterans Path, PATH, Peace, Acceptance, Transformation, and Honor. That's where PATH in our name comes from. But you can find us also on social media, but our website is veteranspath.org, and you can donate at veteranspath.org/donate. And that is basically how we survive and how we do what it is we do is through donations and fundraising grants. We are 501c3, and we're not in it to make money. We're in it to change and save lives.
I love it. And also, just if anybody's like, oh, this is another charity, you also have a high rating as well, as that they have been validated that they're actually doing what they're saying. And the work that I get to see that you've done, I'm blessed beyond measure for you coming on the show. I'm blessed beyond measure that the impact they're making on the world. Continue to do it. And I just want to thank you for coming on, and thank for all that have listened. I hope that you have an amazing and blessed day. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Unapologetically Bold, I'm Not Sorry For. If this touched you in any way, please like and subscribe and share with your friends as we continue the message of being unapologetically bold by being hot humans who are humble, open, and transparent. See you next time.